The University of St. Mary is proud to offer KC's most flexible MBA. Choose your method, online, on ground, or a blend of both. For more details, join us virtually August 9th. RSVP at stmary.edu/RSVP. The Royals were off yesterday, but they'll make up for it today with a doubleheader against the Chicago White Sox. Lance Lynn will start Game 1 for Chicago. No starters named yet in either game for Kansas City. The Chiefs are still at it in St. Joe. Press conference is scheduled to start shortly with all the coordinators. Dave Tobe, Matt Nagy, Brendan Daly, Joe Cullen, and much more as they prepare for the first preseason game of the year against the Chicago Bears Saturday at noon. We'll talk to Todd Lebo and Adam Teicher of ESPN later in the show, both live from St. Joe. Want to win tickets to the 100 years of WHB celebration Thursday night at the Midland? Call right now. Caller number 10 wins a pair of tickets at 913-3810-810. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Here we are standing today. Excuse my language. We're a couple of days away from kickoff. Man, that slipped.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Multitasking here, Josh. Multitasking. You're reading a Sports Center, getting ready and all of that stuff in the break. I'm doing math work with Little Man.
Dad of the year. Oh, what kind of math is he on right now?
We're getting ready for first grade.
Wow.
He starts first grade on Thursday, so a half day Thursday, and then a full day Friday, and then a break. You got to slowly get them ready for going from summer to then school. Mm-hmm. You can't just start on a Monday. Full days Monday through Friday. No, you get a half day Thursday, full day Friday, and then, all right, kids, take a couple days off. Think about it. Let it marinate a little bit. And on Monday, it's go time.
I could help him with math today throughout this entire school year, actually, and then I'm out, though. First grade, I've got
Common
locked down.
Course, I mean, yeah.
Oh, boy, I was making a joke, then I just realized I might not have first grade math locked down now.
Well, no, that's
is
not
math
common.
Different?
But like, when you get a little bit older, it starts to be different. Like, I don't know. I haven't been in school in a while.
Me
I know
neither.
There's, like, different ways of doing it, you know, by hand as opposed to calculators, which are great. I just use the calculator.
Calculators are great. Do you know what I do? I don't even take my calculator app on my phone out at this point. I just type it into Google. I just will go, you know, 54 times 0.25%. Oh, that's 13.5. 13.5 is a quarter of 54. I found that out live on the radio.
So he's doing right now, he's doing some refresher stuff. So like,
that's good.
You know, 8 plus 7 is obviously 26, you know.
I think the only C I got in
plus
college.
15 is 15.
Good. See, he's nailing it. Just
yes.
Like his dad. Just like his old man.
Right. If there's one person you want to learn math from, it's me.
I think the only C I got in college was in a college algebra class that I took as a senior. Because I thought I had tested out as a freshman. Told them I didn't need to take it. Did my little degree audit towards the end. They went, hey, man, you do need a college algebra credit here. And I thought, oh, that's too bad. And then I bombed it. Senioritis. Mm-hmm. Didn't ever too far out, too far gone from math. So I am down to... math questions I can type into a Google search bar.
So you had a C to a D?
Excuse me?
CDs? The only
pardon?
A I got. No. I got an A one time. That was awesome.
Weirdly, it was in college algebra.
Framed that report card. Framed it.
Old.
See, Mom, I told you I could do it. Top of the world, Ma.
What was
top
your favorite world? College class?
What's that?
What was your favorite college class? What did you just, like, really love? What did you lean into?
There was, I had a coaching minor because I figured what's the path of least resistance? So let me get a broadcasting major and a coaching minor. Like, the theories of coaching, either, like, any of them, basketball, baseball, football. Because we had the head football coach, Mel Churchman, that taught the football class.
That's pretty good.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and then we had, you know, theories of basketball and baseball. And then there was a walking class, you know.
How'd you do in that one? Straight A's?
Oddly enough, C.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I just always wanted to rest.
You do have kind of a funny walk out here.
It's the gait. I mean, I couldn't figure out the proper gait to be able to walk.
You always look like you're galloping.
I can't walk.
Jason can either like just shuffle his feet or full out sprint. There's no in between.
Yeah. I have to do the speed walk in the Olympics where both feet can't be touching the ground at the same time.
Yes, your knees have to be perfectly
one
locked.
One or the other. Yeah. You sort of waddle back and forth and do that. Yeah, I just couldn't figure it out. It seemed easy enough because everybody was just strolling and lazily walking around the track, and I was bumping into people and things like that. So I shouldn't have done the spin around a bat 10 times before you walked class.
That's what it looks like.
But I gave it a shot. No, the only class I really ever leaned into was communications law. That was the only,
really?
It's the only one that I was like, because it was, there's a professor at Northwest Missouri State named Fred Lamer that everybody's like, oh, Fred Lamer, you can't get an A in Lamer's class. So I'm like, all right, okay, I'll get an A in comm law. And it did. It's the only one I leaned into because I'm like, I think you can, which annoys my wife because she's like, see if you would have tried. I was like, ah.
Eh. You can only try it so much, though.
I don't think anybody in broadcasting was ever like, hey, what's your GPA?
Never
college?
Got asked. Never once.
So I did study a lot of sports and I did on-air stuff a lot. I kind of feel like that was the college learning experience.
Seems like it worked out okay.
For me. 913-912-4810. I know you talked about it briefly yesterday, but I want to hear from Eric Bieniemy on Ronald Jones. Rojo, they call him. Ronald Jones, Eric Bieniemy was asked about what he's seeing from Ronald Jones in camp so far. Here is his answer to the question about Rojo.
You know what? Rojo's doing a heck of a job. He's obviously a big man. He's done some good things running the football. He just need to continue becoming the football player we expect him to be, because we expect our guys to do a lot from that running back position. And the thing that he's done, he's accepted the challenge, and he's doing things that he hasn't really done in the past. So the thing that I love about him, every single day he comes out here and works his tail off.
He has to continue to try to be the football player we want him to be. He's doing things he hasn't been doing in the past, but he's working hard at it. We know he can run the football, which, by the way, if you're a running back in the NFL, I feel like that is a prerequisite
yep.
to being on an NFL team. The ball in his hands, this guy can run the football. Right, but you're an NFL running back, not just a guy who was really awesome in flag football. There's a lot more things that you got to do in understanding the offensive line, understanding the pass game, and when you've got 15 back there, it's understanding pass protection. What's the thing they loved most about Darrell Williams?
That man, he became a third down back because they trusted him to protect Patrick Mahomes.
The trust. They loved most about him that they could trust him.
Yep.
They knew he was going to get the job done. It wasn't going to be flashy. It wasn't going to be special. He was probably going to get what was blocked for him, and that was it. And he was going to protect Mahomes, and he was going to catch the football. So there was a trust and a level of expectation of what they were going to get week in and week out from Darrell Williams. Now, they decide to move on. They could have re-signed him. I mean, his cap hit this year with the Cardinals is $500,000 less than what it was last year with the Chiefs. So they could have brought him back. They decided not to. And whether that's because they feel like Edwards-Helaire has improved in pass protection, they brought in Jerick McKinnon, Ronald Jones is more of your running back type guy. The question that's going to be posed a lot during the preseason until the final cutdown is if they're going to keep three running backs or four. I think Edwards-Helaire and Jerick McKinnon are two of the three or four. I'm not as convinced that Pacheco is absolutely on the team no matter what. Like Pacheco behind Ronald, Pacheco's on the team. Come on, he's definitely going to be on the team. He might be, you know, and he might be cut and moved to practice squad because there's probably 20 other guys like that out there that other teams are like, oh, we've got our own guy. We hope they don't grab our Isaiah Pacheco. And the Chiefs are like, well, we hope we can get Pacheco to the practice squad. And okay, we did or we didn't. Let's hear from Eric Bieniemy real quick on Isaiah Pacheco, because he has been a guy that a lot of people, media members, those that have watched camp are like, he's really standing out. Yet when coaches have been asked about him outside of Tobe, it's been like, oh, yeah, he's doing his job. Here's Eric Bieniemy on Pacheco.
He's a tough kid. Obviously, we got a lot of good players in that room. So in time, everything will tell for itself. But right now, he's doing some good things. He's working his tail off. But also, too, you got a lot of other guys in there competing their tails off as well.
He's doing some good things, working his tail off. Is insert player here question to coach that's like, nothing really over the top or standing out that I can talk about.
Bieniemy might not have heard of the name in the question, and he could have still given that exact
exactly
same
right.
answer.
Yes.
Doing a heck of a job, loves it out here. Yeah.
Could be also, you know, to play devil's advocate, could also be that he wants Pacheco to still go out and earn it, so he doesn't want to say something that it's like, oh, this guy's really good. And then he's like, okay, I'm gonna earn this job. Okay, I'm good. Could be that as well. Maybe not wanting to offend Derek Gore or any other running back in there as well, and just being generic with that. Ronald Jones was a little more specific. Needs to keep working on the running back we want him to be. He's doing some things he hasn't been asked to do before. He's working hard to try to get there. The pass protection part is huge, because without Darrell Williams, you need somebody you can trust. I think that's Jerick McKinnon. Definitely. He gave up zero pressures last year. Zero pressures last year with Jerick McKinnon in pass blocking reps. Ronald Jones gave up 17% last year. To put that into perspective, Darrell Williams was 9.8%. Even Edwards-Helaire was 12.4. Even Edwards-Helaire, that can't pass protect, was 5% better in terms of pressure percentage that he gave up. Meaning that in Ronald Jones' career, one out of every six pass protections ends up in a pressure. One out of every six. Whereas Edwards-Helaire is one out of every eight. Darrell Williams is one out of every 10. And Jerick McKinnon is one out of every 10. But when he returned from the knee injuries, he had a rough start to the year. But if you take away the first half of the 2020 season, his career is actually one out of every 12. Mm-hmm. One out of every six for Ronald Jones. Twice as many pressures that Ronald Jones gives up than Jerick McKinnon. When you are replacing Darrell Williams, you've got to have that. And I don't know if Pacheco has that or not, but if he has that over Ronald Jones, then I would say he's got kind of a advantage over him, because when I hear Bienemy say, he's continuing to try to, it needs to be the running back we want him to be. He's doing something that he hasn't exactly been good at. And we know that. He's not a third down back at all.
Which is what made his signing curious at the time. I still think it makes sense, because you need some redundancies with your number one running back in the NFL, because no number one running back plays 17 games. No one is there taking 100% of the snaps. It's not 1997. Like, mm-hmm. the position group is different.
Yeah.
So I still think having him on the roster makes sense, even if he never got better at pass blocking. But that is the reason that he can't be the third down back Darrell Williams replacement. It's the reason that Jerick McKinnon being on this roster still makes sense.
Yeah.
But also, I think that might just make Jones a little bit of Clyde Edwards-Helaire insurance, where if Clyde goes down, I think Ronald Jones might be your starting running back, right, with the roster as currently constructed. But I think that if you played out the season with a healthy Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jones might be third or fourth in total running back snaps. Like, that is one of the little intricacies in this roster right now that I think is so fascinating, because it is a roster construction little trick that we don't think about very much. You just want to get guys in on the rotation. Their skill sets here are very different for a group of running backs.
You know what Ronald Jones' pass blocking grade was last year?
Not good. I know it wasn't good.
Jerick McKinnon's was 84.
I'm going to say Jones's was 64. It's too high.
So Jerick McKinnon was 84. 12.
No. Oh, no.
12.4 was Ronald Jones' pass blocking grade last year. 12.4.
Honestly, didn't know they could get that low.
It feels a little bit like Black Sheep when he was like, you know how fast you were going? Well, I got the twin turbos, and I'm probably going 60, 65 tops. 7 miles an hour is what you were going on the highway. What was his number? I don't know. 50, 60, 12.
Yeah, that.
His pass blocking grade last year was 12.
Beards wouldn't even gotten that one right.
He might have actually got that one right.
Beards would have been like, I don't know, 14. No, 12.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's something.
I was going to say 104.
Yeah, that which is obviously an attainable grade that you can get to.
There. Absolutely. Yeah,
it was a weighted course.
There was a tweet.
Grading on a scale is what it is for him.
There was a tweet that came out a little bit ago. I just saw it as you were talking about the Pacheco hype and where you're at on it. Ian Hartsitz of Pro Football Focus tweeted it out, and it's a badly, purposely, poorly photoshopped, like, Frankensteining of a player, and just says, Isaiah Pacheco, running back Frankenstein, feet of Barry Sanders, vision of Walter Payton,
right,
strength of Prime Jesus, athleticism LeBron James. That does it. It feels feels like we're approaching that territory on Pacheco.
That's where I'm dialing it back a little bit on Pacheco.
I liked him when they drafted him, and so I feel like
So we have,
that's the thing, is now we can't be the haters. We got to hop up, especially in this group. Jason, we have to be, give it to the seventh rounder over the former first round pick. That has to be our take. We've built a home on that take. That has to be ours.
Is Edwards-Helaire going to be cut?
He must be. He must. Keeping Michael Burton on this roster is too important.
What other something else that tells you how much they like Pacheco is that, remember Jerry and Ely, when they signed him as an undrafted free agent, they really liked him too. Obviously, they drafted Pacheco,
yeah.
And Ely they signed as a college free agent. Ely is now a wide receiver.
Isaiah Pacheco, new number 10, Tyreek Hill replacement. Wake up, sheeple.
So Jerry and Ely is listed as wide receiver / running back, but on the depth chart, he's a wide receiver.
Offensive weapon, Dexter McCluster.
That's right. That's right. So I liked Ely in the rookie camp and the mini camps and what he could do. The Chiefs clearly like Pacheco more than Ely, and they think Ely is a guy that, okay, if you put the ball in his hands as a wide receiver, things like that. But we hadn't seen Pacheco before. And he runs hard, and he's a new guy, and he's getting some play. So I feel like the training camp hype starts to increase more and more on that guy. Edwards-Helaire is still going to be your number one.
Yes.
Jerick McKinnon is going to be your third down back and maybe your number two. Ronald Jones and Pacheco, if they are enamored by a sixth wide receiver and they have to have it, I don't know who they go with out of those two. Because Pacheco would be redundant with Jerick McKinnon. Ronald Jones would be redundant with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but less of pass protection than Edwards-Helaire even offers.
And I do imagine that they are asking. You heard it from Bieniemy. I saw Nick Jacobs of 41 tweet earlier today that Jones had a nice one-on-one pass blocking rep.
Well, that's good.
This is going to be something that they are working on. Like, I don't think Bieniemy's not just blowing smoke there. Like, that is what it's going to take, I think, for Jones to keep his spot. If there is one small lesson that we can take from this, I think, and just plant this seed for whenever we do all this again in 4 or 5 years, whenever you find a running back that you want to have hype for in an offseason, it can come no matter where they were drafted or where they're coming from. If it's an unknown young guy, Brett Veach said that he thought there'd be a 1,000-yard rusher who went undrafted in this class. Presumably, presumably Pacheco was their favorite or one of their favorites in that seventh-round undrafted class. It could be him. That's part of the nature of the position. Even as Clyde remains the guy, Clyde is the most talented running back on this roster right now. I don't even think that's close. He should be the number one guy in this group. But you can find great running back help from a variety of places across the NFL.
I think McKinnon would give him a run for his money. I think McKinnon would be in.
I think McKinnon 5 or 6 years ago, I would 100% be with you.
I don't know. McKinnon in the playoffs was pretty damn good.
He was.
He was pretty special.
He was.
When he finally got a chance just to be the guy and not getting limited reps.
Keep him in a cryogenic chamber until January.
That's fine, too.
Put him in a chamber.
Although.
Han Solo, that bleep. Carbonite.
Although, if you look, like, we don't have time to get into it.
Yeah, good call.
We don't have time to get
Beards
into
is,
it.
Beards has never been prouder of you.
We need to take a break. We'll come back, and we'll hear from the Chiefs sometime soon. They are wrapping up practice, we believe, there in St. Joe. And we'll hear from the Chiefs, the coaches, coming up next. All right, welcome back here in the zone. Let's head up to St. Joe. Dave Tobe talking right now.
Surprise him, see if throw him in there, see how he would handle it. I don't think we found our backup kicker yet, but we're gonna continue, you know, because he's got a good leg. We're gonna keep working it and see what he can do there. Give him a little bit more practice before we just throw him in.
Dave, the last time we talked to you, you talked about some of the returners, how you were eager to see them in a game. What about the non-returners? Are there guys, specific individuals you're eager to see in the game on Saturday?
Yeah, I want to see all the rookies. I want to see, you know, guys like Cook. I want to see him cover. Anderson, unfortunately, got hurt today. But other safeties I want to see. You know, I also want to see Watson. You know, I want to see Justin Watson, the wide receiver. I want to see Jalen Watson, the corners, Nazee Johnson. I mean, all those guys, every one of those defensive guys, we got to sort that thing out. We got to see who's going to be a player for us and who can help us on teams. And, you know, this Bears game is going to be real important for all those guys. You know, I can't mention them all right now, but every one of them, it's a real important game.
And on the depth chart came out last night, and obviously Pacheco was listed first at kick returner. How much stock should we put into that? That's probably what
he's going to be. We're going to start him off. Like I said last time, we're going to give him every chance to be that guy. I mean, I just think he's got all the attributes, you know, to be a good kick returner, and he's gotten better and better at practice, and he's doing little things better, and he's catching the ball great. You know, and now we got to see what happens with live bullets. When guys are coming down there to take your head off, it's a little bit different. So we'll see how he handles it.
He did some of that early in his career at Rutgers, and then they took him off. You know, yeah. When they took him off?
I don't know exactly when they took him off. I know he doesn't have a lot, so he hasn't done it in a long time. Same thing goes with Sky. You know, we're going to put Sky back there on punt return, and he hasn't gotten a lot either, you know, in college. So there'll be a lot of firsts, you know, in his game, but it's all good. It's going to be fun.
When Tyreek was here, eventually you guys eased him off returning. Is it possible to see something similar with Hardman? Would that be
yeah, exactly. I mean, if Hardman's getting a lot of reps on offense, you know, we don't want him to run a punt returner and then have to take him out for the first down of offensive play. I mean, that's really what happens. And, you know, now you're handicapping your offense, you know, because he just got done running a punt return. So, I'm hoping, you know, we're hoping that he can be a guy. We got McDuffie now too. McDuffie's a guy. He's probably out of all the guys he's probably the best catcher. I'd call him the best punt catcher right now, the way we see it in camp. You know, but you know, everything changes when you have live bullets. So we got to see how they handle it. They have to have toughness. They have to be smart. It can't be a guy that's going to block somebody in the back, an important return. And, they have to be aggressive. They have to have great speed, toughness, great balance, you know, to block, willingness to block. I mean, you know, there's a lot of offensive players that aren't necessarily, they don't want to stick their head in there. And, you know, I'm talking about the wide receivers that want to get in there and do the tough, dirty work. Same thing goes with DBs, so we got to find out about those guys. I mean, that's, you know, you can't really resemble that. You can't get that in these practices.
You ask those things of players, and then you see it translate on the game in the preseason. What does that feel like for you?
Oh, it's a great feeling for me, but it's really good for the player. I mean, his confidence is everything. You know, so if they see himself doing it against an NFL player, you know, that just it just continues to enhance their, you know, abilities. So. All right, thanks.
All right, there's Dave Tobe. He wants to see every Watson and every Johnson on the Chiefs team in special teams, wants to see some of the wide receivers. And just as we were talking about with Isaiah Pacheco, every chance to be that guy. Every chance to be that guy. Do we know who is up right now?
Matt Nagy was on the schedule to be next. We don't. Beard says the thing is Matt Nagy. Hey, and if it's not Matt Nagy, we'll tell you otherwise.
And the sense of calling plays and defense.
Yeah, I feel really good about the group that we've got there. Nick's done an excellent job. He's continued to grow from a year ago, has really good understanding in terms of checks, adjustments, and communication skills. Darius Harris has done a great job there as well. I would say his growth in the 3 years that he's been doing that has been really impressive to me. Leo has done a really nice job with some of that when he's in there. Jack Cochran has managed some of that as well. So I feel good about the depth and the knowledge and understanding we've got at that position, for sure.
All right, this is linebackers coach Brendan Daly.
I don't know how many you're going to keep, but how difficult is this decision,
well,
knowing what you just said?
No, that's a great point. Here's what we've got in that room. We've got eight guys. They're, first of all, phenomenal human beings. They're, second of all really good football players. And I would say, yeah, there's great competition. There's great battles going on within it. They all work well together. But, yeah, there's some difficult decisions potentially. We got a long way to go here. We're still early in that process. But excited about the group that we've got, for sure.
Why has Elijah Lee sort of stepped up as a potential starter, as a guy that has done a lot, even though this is his first year in the system?
Yeah, he's done a nice job for us. He's got a good understanding of what we're asking him to do. He's detailed. He's able to handle a couple of different roles. You know, he's done a nice job in coverage. He's done a nice job in run fits. So he's in the mix with this thing, for sure. And like I mentioned, I'd say there's still a lot of competition to be played out here before any decisions are made. But, you know, I thought they competed extremely well individually and collectively as a group, particularly today.
When you've got a guy like Leo, who is such a downfield player and has to do that a lot in college, what's the challenge in, you know, teaching him the passing game and learning how to be a little bit more?
Yeah, there's some things he needs to do to improve there, you know, and there's some things he needs to do in the run game to improve. I would say, you know, he's played off the ball a lot more than on the ball, you know, so some of that line of scrimmage stuff he's still learning and working through. Some of the coverage stuff, both man and zone, I would say probably more man. He's got a little bit more experience in zone and a little bit natural, more natural feel there. But he's continuing to work hard at it and getting better every day.
NFL, you just have two bad backers on the field. What do you think the ceiling is for Willie Gay and Nick Bolton when it comes to just league-wide tandems in the NFL?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can't speak to everybody else's roster. You know what I mean? I think those are two really good players, and I think they play well together and well off of each other, and their skill sets complement each other in many ways. So that's an advantage for us. How they stack up league-wide, I don't know. I don't have everybody else's roster on my mind.
When you talk about those guys taking the next step, specifically, what do you think they need to work on in order to get to that next level?
Well, I'd say there's a consistency element there. And I would say they both continue to strive for perfection. It's a fun thing to be around those guys because they want to be coached. They want to be right. They take, honestly, both of them probably take the mistakes that they made too harshly. And I'd say that's one of the things we've talked about. I thought Willie did a nice job of it in a situation today where there's a bad play that happens. You can't live with that when you can't dwell on that when you got to find a way to flush it and move on and play the next one and not allow a bad play or a good play to affect the next play, which Willie had a nice instance of that today in practice. And he's an emotional guy out there. And so, you know, he kind of rides that roller coaster at times. And Nick is such a perfectionist. He rides that thing at times, you know. He had one today where, you know, after the play, he's, you know, raising his hand. Yep, that's me. I screwed that one up. But I love being around that. I would say, though, that at a certain point, they got to just move on and play the next down.
From a personal standpoint, how has the position switched on for you with Joe coming in and taking your old role and you the linebacker?
You know, it's been really smooth, honestly. I can't say it's been perfect. I've had some bumps in the road personally. I'll speak for myself in terms of learning and you know, things that are new and different, which has been great. But it's been great having Joe. He and I have known each other for a long time. We've never worked together. But our relationship in terms of the run fits and some of the rush stuff that we're working on together has been really good from my standpoint. Let me speak for me. He may have a different answer on that. Take care.
All right, there's Brendan Daly, linebackers coach for the Chiefs. It looks like Joe Cullen is going to be next up, who is the defensive line coach, which was the previous spot for Brendan Daly. So Daly moves out to linebackers. Cullen moves in just as the press conference is here as well. So Joe Cullen, when he starts talking, we will head out there. And this is Joe Cullen right now.
If you witnessed that thing, it was competitive on both sides. And that's what's always great about a coach read training camp practice, the grind, the reps, but the competition is what really separates us. And some of you that don't know me, Joe Cullen, D-line coach. And with that, I'll open it up for questions.
Joe, are you seeing signs out there yet that maybe the pass rush is going to be more productive than it was last season?
Yeah, I'll tell you, first of all, it's a really good group, and they're really working hard from top to bottom. But, you know, starting with, Chris Jones, Frank Clark, they came back in great shape. They're working through every rep, and Frank lost some weight. He's really quick off the snap. You know, Mike Dana is consistent every snap. I really like the way the group's going. Our rookie, George Kalafdis, is doing a great job. He brings a lot of energy. He's like a sponge out there, just loves football, and he's powerful. And you don't want to take a play off on him. And we're really getting some good push from our interior guys and like where we're at right now.
Chris Jones was pretty vocal in essentially saying he really loves working with you. From your end of it, why do you think you guys clicked?
He did say that? Okay. No, I'm just kidding. No, I tell you what, I've always liked Chris from afar. I really tried to get him, you know, but obviously he went earlier and couldn't get him. But I love the way he has always played, and he's really just buying into just working his best that he can every day, and he's done that out here. He's done a great job consistently getting better every day, and I love working with him. He's smart, but he tries to do exactly what you're trying to teach him to do.
impressions so far with working with Carlos Dunlap, and he had a play out there this morning where he kind of hit Chad Henne. What was your message to him after that play?
Well, I love the rush, but stay away from our quarterbacks. Do not go near them. So I loved what we did on that rush. And Carlos is another one. From afar, when I was in Baltimore for 5 years, watching him play and loved him when he was coming out. He brings a lot to the table. You know, those older guys, Frank Clark and Carlos and Chris and the Mike Danas that have been around a little bit, they're really helping George out, but they're also helping out the younger guys. And Carlos is a 96 career sack guy, and you know, we love the addition of Carlos to our group.
Expectations for him, Joe?
Carlos, hey, just compete to be the best that he can be and help out our defensive line and work his way into the rotation, and love what he's doing so far.
Your reputation, like the help, mentorship, I should say, with Frank Clark and George Karloftis, how have you seen that from afar, and like how Frank's helping George in his progression as a rookie coming in?
Well, that started from the first day. Really, Frank just, you know, he knows the defense, he's been around, and, you know, he's doing a great job, not only in the classroom, but also out here. You see him on the side talking to George when he comes off the field. Hey, this is what you could have did better. Or, hey, work on your get off. You missed with your hands. He's doing a great job mentoring. And it's not always like that. I'll be honest with you. You know, I've been around a lot of guys where it is like that. I've had Terrell Suggs before, you know, Corey Redden and Sean Rogers where they did that. But some guys, you get a first round pick, you know, they don't want to tell them anything. But our guys are doing a phenomenal job with that.
You mentioned earlier this offseason that you expect a career year from Chris Jones. I just wonder, what leads you to say that, and what are you wanting to get out of him for such a season?
Well, our first goal always here is to hoist that Lombardi Trophy, win the Lombardi Trophy. And for us to get there and get the opportunity to do that, he has to have a career year. And that means not only in the stats of sacking the quarterback, but knocking the run out. You know, and that's something that we've stressed with him, you know, him having his best year, and not only him, but all of us in the room and myself as a coach and us as coaches. And that's what we're trying to get with Chris, and he's really working towards that.
Coach, you mentioned it's not always like that with a veteran trying to help a younger guy. Is that more about Frank, or is it about the culture here?
I mean, where is it? I think it starts with the culture. You know, when I was in Baltimore, the culture was really this culture because Coach Harbaugh worked under Coach Reed for 9-10 years. But it's more the culture. And I think, you know, I think some guys, you know, they're fighting for a spot maybe and don't want the rookie to take theirs, but it's not always like that.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks.
Appreciate you.
First time I've heard him talk, and I want to hear more.
He's gotten a lot of buzz around him for an incoming positional coach. That's pretty
right.
Rare.
Does he make the squad or Pacheco?
They're both going to be there.
Probably.
My hope at this point, at least.
We shall see. We'll tell you who is up next. It's going to be Dave Merritt is
next.
Going to be up next. That would be the defensive backs coach. Here he is right now.
Got going on at cornerback.
Well, yeah, first of all, to have him out there is big for us all. To see him go through the rehab and be able to have a chance to come back and be with his brothers on the field is big. And so the thing that we're going to do is take him through individual. And then he'll get a couple of the one-on-ones. And then after that, we'll continue to just matriculate him into all the other periods. And so it's great having him back, and he's been great in the classroom for us.
What's it like with all the young players you guys are getting work with this year? It's more than normal, right?
Yeah, it's like Christmas. It's like Christmas. This is my 26th year in the league, and I've never been around a group where I call them the Fab Five. And most of them weren't even born then. I said, but, you know, we drafted 5 guys, and I said, you guys need to understand that this group is very special. So to be able to have the guys to come in and have the camaraderie that they've had and be able to have the love for one another has been great. But it's like Christmas. I mean, you're working with the guys, you're trying to teach them new techniques. They're all sponges. So it's been wonderful.
Steve Spagnuolo has shown a tendency to, at the beginning of seasons, trust more veterans. Obviously, this year, you're going to have to really trust a lot of run guys. Have you had talks like that about, in a way, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable in that sense?
No, I haven't. Not with the young guys at all. So the young guys, what I want them to do is just look at it as football. And so what's the call, what's the technique that we're asking you to play, and go out and execute that technique to the best of your ability. I don't get into the veterans, young guy thing because – all of a sudden, you may start thinking that you're less than. And I don't want the young guys to think that they're less than anyone else that's out there on the field. And so I just make sure that I teach them the techniques, what it is that I'm looking for out of this particular call, and let them go out there and just do the best they can.
How do you sense Trent McDuffie has settled in?
Trent has done a great job. Trent has competed with the ones the entire time. He's very comfortable out there at the corner spot as well as the nickel. And so the thing is that now we have a guy who can actually do dual roles for us, just like LJ and so. But he's very patient at the line of scrimmage and done a great job.
What have you learned from Brian Cook so far?
Brian Cook, what I've seen about with this young man is the fact that he has taken the leadership role of the young class that's coming in. Cook is the one, he's the energized bunny. You see him on the sideline, he's the one over there dancing to the music and everything. And so he has taken a leadership role, which is what we thought that he was going to become, and he's already doing it for us.
How important will the preseason games be to these rookies to get assimilated, see what they can really do?
Very important. I remember back when I was a rookie in Miami, you know, Don Shula at the time, you go out there, you throw rookies out there to see how well they're going to fare versus the big guys. And so the fact that we have these games that are coming up, I know it's three, not four, it's very important for the rookies to be able to get in there and get their feet wet. They're all nervous right now. I told them yesterday, I said, hydrate and understand that you're going to be playing on defense as well as special teams. So don't look for any breaks, all right? So make sure you stretch and hydrate.
That dynamic you mentioned, the Pete asked earlier about the younger guys, you know, usually the past couple years when you had those younger guys in, Tyron, I'm sure, was one of those guys
yep.
who would help out.
That's right.
That dynamic change without him.
Yeah, so without a veteran in the room at the corner position that has the number of years that like a Tyron had, you know, we have looked towards guys such as LJ Snead and the Fenton, the guys that have been here, although they've only been in the league for 3 and 4 years. But you look at Rashad Fenton, I mean, his leadership role is going to be big for us. He's been to 2 Super Bowls. He's been to, you know, AFC Championship game. He's played in those big games. And so, and he has talked to these guys about staying focused, technique, wear your eyes. And so it's been big for those two veterans that are at the cornerback position to be able to help these young guys come along.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thank you.
All right, there's defensive backs coach Dave Merritt. We'll hear from Joe Blamire, Matt Nagy, and Mike Borgonzi still in St. Joe training camp. So the defensive backs, it's Christmas. The Fab Five, which the guys weren't even born when the Fab Five was out, but said never been around something like this. The group is very special, the five guys that were drafted. So
also we'll a different group for him. Sam Madison departs for the Dolphins that last offseason. So Dave Merritt, now the head guy back there.
There you go. Joe Blamire, wide receivers coach now.
He could start swimming in all the different things that are going on, and he wants to stay right up on top of it. And he's the first one to come over and ask and then give hypotheticals about a different situation. So he's just seeing the big picture, not just, you know, the specific route or the rep that he took, which has been good to see.
How difficult is it for a rookie to get involved in this offense at the level that you guys are going to expect?
Yeah, it can be. Everybody's different. His approach, I think, it's helped having some other new faces in our room. And whereas some rookies might use it as an excuse, it's my first year in the NFL, this is a lot of stuff to learn, and they crutch on that. He's seen all the other guys come in, they're learning our offense for the first time, and there's no excuses for them. We expect the veteran guys who we brought in to know everything, and they're learning it as well. And so Sky has taken that approach, like, hey, if they're knowing everything, and it's the first time they're hearing it, then I should too. And so just kind of being in that environment, and taking that approach, that professional approach, where here's what's expected, and it's not too much to handle, has been served him well so far.
Beyond Travis, it looks like Juju's really established himself as a go-to guy for Pat. What have you seen in their growth? What have you learned about Juju since getting to work with him now for the offseason?
Yeah, Juju, he comes to work. His personality is infectious. I mean, he's great to be around. He works hard. He's a great player. He's just got a natural feel. And it's very similar to Trav. He just knows the game and the passing game. His style of route running, it gets him open. And the quarterbacks see it, and they put it on him, and he makes the catch. And so that's what we've been seeing. That's what we expected. And you can see both through our practices the feel he has for the game and then just the personality around his teammates in the locker room, how likable and enjoyable he is to be around. Just all helps with that chemistry.
Joe, what would you say your sense of Matt Nagy's return has been in – helping you guys have cohesion and all this?
Yeah, I think it does help. We know each other. Matt can ask questions, or Coach Nagy can ask questions about what we've changed since he's been gone and why. So then we can go go back to the fundamentals or the foundation of what we are doing, talk about the progressions that we've gone to, and then really we can revisit whether it's still valid this year going forward. Should we go back to the things we've done before, keep where we've progressed? Are all the same assumptions that we've made holding true at this point in time? So it's been a good discussion and dialogue, having him know the foundation of where he left and where we are now, and then kind of just bridge where we want to go.
Sort of helps you audit the whole thing.
Yeah, I would say it's a great audit because it's an outside pair of eyes, but yet he has an understanding of where it came from. And so then it forces us and forces all the coaches to say, here's why we did this. And then is that why still applicable today? Yes or no?
How has Marquez felt the scaling for you guys, right? You get a lot of change in the wide receiving group. How has he been in practice and what have you seen from him?
Yeah, MVS. I said it earlier, true professional. He's a perfectionist. He comes out, he knows exactly what he's got. He wants to be perfect on every single rep. He is exactly where he needs to be, where he needs to be. And we're taking a ton of reps all through these camps and sometimes not putting all the guys in the most optimal position to win. And he's just fighting right through that, getting to where he needs to be and making all his routes as best they can be.
All right. There's Joe Blamire, wide receivers coach, and certainly he's got a tall task, just as Dave Merritt does, defensive backs coach with all the new faces. But Joe Blamire with all the new wide receiver faces, along with Sky Moore as well. And how about a new quarterbacks coach, Matt Nagy? He's up at the podium now.
We heard the crowd chanting for you to come over and sign autographs. And I just wonder what that says about your return here and what it's felt like being here again.
Yeah, no, it's very welcoming. It doesn't surprise me. They're very passionate. They love their football. We had some great times here, great experiences. The last 4 years here of me not being here and what Coach Reed, Veach, Patrick, and EB and the rest of this crew have done is nothing short of amazing. But I think we had a lot of good times up to that point, and now I'm back, and I appreciate that, and it means a lot to me.
Talk about the fact that the 4 years there,
yeah,
with a little bit of hindsight now.
Sure.
How do you balance the highs with maybe the fact that when it ended, it wasn't fun?
Sure. No, I think it's real life experiences. I'll say this right now, Pat, I wouldn't change anything of those 4 years experiences. I changed a lot of what happened is wishing we won more and could have done more. But I learned a lot, and that part I wouldn't change. I think I got to be able to self-reflect on where I went wrong and how I could have been better. But I built a ton of great relationships with a lot of great people, starting with Mrs. McCaskey, with George McCaskey, Ted Phillips, Ryan Pace, and so many great players and coaches. We did, those will last forever. Those aren't going to leave. 4 years is gone, but it didn't end how we wanted it to. And there was disappointment, there was discouragement. But in all that said, I know I'm not defeated. I know those other players, coaches, and people aren't defeated. And so we just got to be better from it. Well, I had plenty of time to do it once I got fired. You have some time, and there's the grieving process. I think that's normal, but you have to use that to be better. And however that is, but when you have a circle of friends of people that can help you out through that process, it makes it a lot easier. So it's a part of it, man. This is the next journey for me, the next chapter, and we're gonna move on with that.
Matt, we'll talk to you. I guess it's been a couple months ago. You've gotten back here with Patrick.
Yeah.
Now that you've been out here in the practice field and the meetings and all that stuff, what's different about him? How's he grown since you were with him before?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It is so neat to see his growth of where he's at and what he's done. So, number one, he's been through 4 years of a lot of wins, a lot of, whether it's the Pro Bowl, Super Bowl, that Super Bowl MVP, four Pro Bowls, et cetera, a lot of wins. When you walk into that room for the first time and you see him in a meeting room and he's sitting there having four different conversations, three of them are football and one's off to the side on something else, you see his growth, his leadership. When he's out here on the football field, it's just wild to see what type of leader he is. He's rare. And, in that time that I had a couple months after I got fired, I was able to read a book called Relentless. And it talks about, being great leaders and being somebody that can just be great in the moment. And he has so much confidence. And when he walks in the room, results occur because of that confidence every day in practice. That's rare. You don't come across that very much. And he makes me a better coach because of that. He makes his teammates better players. And it's just special.
Well, we talk a lot about players and playing their former teams. And obviously on Saturday, you're going to be going back to the Chicago.
Yeah.
Is it something where you feel like there'll be a lot of emotions. Are you looking forward to Sunday in the sense of just getting through it? How are you taking
it? Yeah, so number one, what I have to do, it's my professional job to make sure I step back and make sure it's about we and not me. I mean that when I say that. But that's hard sometimes. And so when you get there, I'm so used to being in the on the home side, right? On the home sideline, in the home locker room coming out. It's different. I don't know how I'll feel when I get out there. But I'm here for this team and these guys, and I built great relationships with those with everyone there. And but it's the preseason too, so we're gonna go out there and have some fun.
Matt, just did you ever talk to Patrick about his count to 10 in Chicago that night? Did that ever come up between you guys?
No comment.
Yes, no.
What's that?
How when you're in those meetings, Patrick, how would you describe how he communicates with his scenes to those receivers and how you're sort of seeing this, given that it seems like you need to be a little more freedom to sort of evolve with y'all.
Yeah, so the quarterback has a lot of flexibility with the toolbox that we have. And for him, this is a little bit new and different for him this year because he's got new wide receivers. And so I think it's pretty cool to see him walk through the process of what he sees. So when we're in meetings sometimes, you know, coach does his deal and he runs the meetings, he goes through everything, but then there's also a side where he lets Patrick go through and see it from the wide receiver, see it from Patrick's view. And that's awesome because the wideouts see that, they connect, and Patrick's really, really good at communicating sometimes, hey, you didn't run the right route, but here's how you should run it. But he does it without hurting their feelings. Again, a rare trait that he has, and it's just neat to be a part of.
Man, when it comes to Andy and Eric, you all together again, you were with them previously. What's that kind of remarriage, if you will, been back? It's been like riding a bicycle, or is it some things you found differently about how it's been working?
No, without a doubt it is. The roles are a little bit different, obviously, with EB and myself. But when you understand, like, again, what these guys have done together when I've been removed for 4 years is rare. It's awesome. Coach Reed has a culture and the way he does things, and we all follow. EB has been amazing at what he's done at his job. It's neat to see. He's grown a lot, and he's helped me out. So now we're a team. We work together. We help each other out. There's zero egos, and it is kind of like riding a bicycle, but at the same point in time, man, we're all in this for one reason. Zero egos, and we're here to win. That's it. And so it makes it easy when you're here for that.
Matt, you said there's – things that looking back, you wouldn't change a thing. We've heard up in Chicago some players said these practices are harder, we're doing this and that. Mm-hmm. In terms of just the X's and O's, you wouldn't change.
There's a lot of I guess it's a broad statement when you say that. You look back and you reflect. You say, yeah, I would change this or change that. There's different silos that I look at and I say, okay, I'd probably do something different here. And then you can get into the schematics, the X's and O's, the personnel, etc. But at the same point in time, you learn from some of that and you say, okay, if I was to go back and have that opportunity, would I handle it the same way? Maybe for some instances, yes, and maybe for some, no. But, in the end, for us, it just didn't end how we wanted to, but that's okay. We move on and new journey.
All right, thank you. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you, man. All right, there's Matt Nagy, quarterbacks coach, reunion.
Got somewhere to be.
Yeah. Shut up. There's meetings right now. All right. Mahomes is holding the meeting right now, but Nagy needs to be there as well. Come on. A lot of compliments of what he has seen from Patrick Mahomes in the 4 years since he was absent. So we'll get into that, but here is Assistant GM Mike Borgonzi.
Competition's been great so far. This is my 14th training camp that I've had the privilege to be a part of with the Chiefs. I was part of the original team that came up here in 2010, so it's always great to come up here to Missouri Western. Entire city of St. Joe's, they just do an outstanding job every year hosting us. So where our roster is right now, we've added 50 new players to roster since the end of last season, active guys. Whether that be through reserve future signings, unrestricted free agents, draft, trades, waiver claims. So every year, every team is different. So I think coach stresses, you know, coming up here and building that team camaraderie, especially for the new guys to get acclimated to the way we practice, the way we, our culture. And that's also an important time for our personnel department. So we're out here every day watching practice. After practice, we're, in there watching tape multiple times to really hone in on different position groups and players. At night, we're meeting with the coaches to get their input and their rankings on the players. You know, how are they doing in the meeting rooms? How are they picking up the playbook? Are the new guys getting acclimated to our culture? And so then once this weekend starts, really, we begin the process of evaluating the other 31 rosters in the league. So that's an important time for us. So it's not just the 14 wide receivers that we have in camp here. It's the 400 league-wide that we're going to get our eyes on. So it's a lot of work. Our pro department does a great job, headed up by Tim Terry, and bringing up those players to, you know, Veach, myself, Mike Bradway, you know, to find value. We're never going to stop trying to add to this roster. You know, when you get up to training camp, the draft is over. There's a few different ways. It's through street free agency. You saw us sign Carlos Dunlap last week, and then through the waiver claim process that happens here after the cutdown day is a big time for us. And then you've also seen us make some small trades during the preseason, whether it's player for player or conditional picks. I think back in 2018, that's how we were able to acquire Tre'Davious Ward in a trade with Dallas for a player for player. So we're always looking for different ways to add players, to add competition to the group throughout training camp. You know, it's just all part of the process here as we try to get down to the best 53 players, best 16-man practice squad as we head into week one. Excited about this weekend, another great opportunity for these guys to come out and showcase what they can do and compete. And then, you know, great opportunity for us to kind of evaluate them in game-like conditions now. So, yeah, so with that, I'll open it up.
You look at this year's group of draft picks, you feel like there's maybe one quality that they all share, that, or at least most of the guys share? Is there kind of one thing you might, one yeah. word or quality you might use to sum up this year's group?
So there's a lot of traits we look for through the draft. And it sounds simple, but do they love football? Do they love the process? Do they love the grind? And you see these rookies pushing through practice. I don't know if we've had a rookie miss practice yet. You know, they love the game. They love meeting. They want to get better. They're constantly doing that. So when we're going through that evaluation phase during the draft, and our college guys do a great job of really vetting their personal character and the football character, you know, it's, do they love the game? You know, are they smart? Are they tough? Are they dependable? Are they going to be good in the community? So those are the things we've really tried to emphasize over the last couple of years.
You guys go and take five defensive backs, which is half the class, which is really unique, somewhat unique.
Yeah.
How much of that strategy was, okay, let's get quantity here? I know you guys obviously like the quality of these players, yeah. but you're saying, okay, we're going to draft a lot of these guys and sort of see what sticks in a sense.
Yeah, you know, I think every year you lose some players, right? So we lost Tre'Davious. And there's that window of 2 or 3 years we have guys under contract, and then there's going to be a new influx of players. You know, last year was more the offensive line. This year was the, you know, defensive back. So, yeah, we made it a priority to get a lot of guys in here to up the competition. And these guys are out here learning every day. And these rookies have been great. You know, they're going to have their ups and downs, but they've been fighting through it. They're very coachable, which is a good thing. And so, you know, so far, so great. We're early in the process. We, you know, we obviously have a whole evaluation here with the preseason games, but it's been good so far.
Mike, for you professionally, when you go back to the time when you first arrived here, going yeah. back to 2010, from John Dorsey to Scott Pioli to even Brett Veach, what would you say are some of the biggest takeaways that you've learned from those three general managers yeah. as you try to set yourself up for success somewhere down the road?
So I've been fortunate enough to learn from some great people in this business, and it's been the three general managers that I've worked under. Scott hired me here in 2009. You know, I was able to learn from him, you know, the New England scale and how they evaluated players and their philosophy that he had with Coach Belichick. And then John comes in here, and it's a whole different ball game, whole different way of evaluating guys, different grade scale, different philosophy, different meeting process. And that was deeply rooted in Ron Wolf's. So they had two organizations that had a lot of success. And then, you know, with Veach, you know, he's put his own spin on things, and every GM, every leader is different in their philosophies. And, you know, I have a special relationship with Veach because we worked, you know, with each other for so long before he became general manager. So, you know, I would say the one thing I've learned from Veach is, you know, his ability to connect with everybody in the organization, collaboration, you know, from Clark to Andy to Mark to myself to Rick to Ted. And, you know, just being in that environment and just everybody pulling in the right direction, I think has been a real key to our success here.
I also just along those lines, Mike, I mean, you played different roles within
yeah.
each of those administrations. How much do you feel like that's just sort of expanded, like what you've been able to grow?
Yeah, well, you know, 14 seasons, so I think I've started out on the college side and had a lot of different roles. I was actually the first year we had training camp up here, I was doing operations. I had Mitch Reynolds' job plus the pro scouting duties. So yeah, I'm very fortunate to be exposed to all that stuff. The guys who hired me allowed me to grow, and so I think that's the biggest thing. So yeah, I've had a lot of worn a lot of hats, I guess, in the organization, whether that's college and pro or doing operations. You just kind of see how all the moving pieces in the organization come together. So just been really fortunate that way.
I cover the Bears, so I'm contractually obligated to ask about Ryan Poles.
Yeah.
What about Poles?
So I go way back with Ryan. So we started out, when I first started working at Boston College, he was actually a player on the team. So I, you know, I loved Ryan the player, and then, you know, when he got done with the Bears, we had a spot open for a GA job, so we hired him in the recruiting office there. And you know, we've had a special relationship over the years. We first moved out here, and I was living in an apartment with him and his wife. I don't know how much they appreciated that, but the money was tight then, and I appreciate that. And Ryan's going to do a great job there. You know, we're really close friends, you know, close with the family, close with Katie and his kids, and just couldn't be more happy that he's out there.
He's being tested right now with Roquan Smith. What about his personality made you think that he's built for this, because it's a stressful
life? The thing with Ryan, he's calm and steady, so he's going to make the right decisions. He's going to take in the information. He's going to be patient, and I'm sure things will work out there for him.
Your name tends to come up a lot as the season ends, as a hot name to watch potential general manager spot. Mm-hmm. How much do you pay attention to that, and do you feel you are ready for that next step?
I do see it, yeah. You know, I'm very fortunate to have the job that I have here now, so you want to stay focused on the job at hand. I do have aspirations to become a general manager one day, and I think when the time is right, it'll come.
How do you try to navigate the message that is somewhat aligned with what the coaches are saying, but obviously given the front office's perspective?
Yeah, so I think it's a great job, a great thing that we have so much communication with the coaches. We meet with them every night, so we're all on the same page and how they're doing in the meeting rooms and how they're doing at practice. Of course, we have discussions about it. But yeah, you have to keep those relationships with the players. And you know, as the season goes on and they're in the office all the time, I get, you know, closer to some of these guys. But we do such a good job of being on the same page with the coaching staff and the personnel staff that it's the same message.
Last one, Todd.
You guys, it's been here a long time, obviously, but through a lot of different levels of rosters that were Super Bowl rosters or maybe not so much, right?
Yep.
How many really good football players are you guys going to cut that can still play in this league? Is this about as deep as you have?
Yeah, I'd say the competition has been great and every position group. So there's going to be some players here that we're going to have to move on from, just numbers wise, that and they're going to be playing for some other teams. So, you know, I credit to the, you know, the whole personnel department for really getting the competition in here high.
Let's do one more.
You've got some late round draft picks that are, at least for now, competing for some playing time.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have an idea that guys like Josh Williams and Pacheco and maybe even Jalen Watson would be kind of competing this far into camp for some meaningful time?
So when you're drafting that late, you're looking for traits, and I think they all had those kind of traits. You know, Watson's a bigger corner. You know, Isaiah's a bigger back that could run. Even Nazi is a guy that ran a 4.35 coming out. So they have these traits. And then when you're looking for those traits, okay, what's the characteristics that's going to make them work? And they all kind of had that. They were all, you know, trying to get better every year in college. And we've seen some of them at All-Star games. They got better through the week. So we did have high hopes for them coming in, but you don't know until they get on the field.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Mike.
My brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, we already began. Yeah.
There's Mike Borgonzi, assistant general manager for the Kansas City Chiefs, along with Dave Tobe, Matt Nagy, Joe Colan, Dave Merritt, and Joe Blamire. All talking today out at training camp. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. We'll catch up with Todd Lebo, see what he's seen out there in training camp in St. Joe. We'll get his thoughts on that. But we got some tickets to give away. We got some ticket drops going on right now. Started at 11:30. What's the latest on that?
You can go out right now to Amini's in Overland Park. That's 10595 Metcalf Avenue. Go see Dylan. Dylan's out there. Dylan's a good dude. You're gonna enjoy your time meeting Dylan if you haven't met him already. And go grab yourself a pair of tickets for the 100-year celebration, 100 years of WHB. That's Thursday night at the Midland. And you can go get your tickets right now at the Amini's in Overland Park.
There you go. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling some more Chiefs on the other side of the break right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.